Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Kirk Gray.
Hey, Kirk. You know, it was a whole raft of questions that we got recently. And, and as I'm kind of reading through that, it wasn't a specific question, but I was reading through another article I was that was going up on the site, more in the root cause analysis article series by Bob Latino. Mm-hmm. And I think it's actually called The RCA. So you and Bob would have a great time, I think. You both like figuring out why things fail.
Right.
But he was making a point in his article that there's a relationship between a well-maintained set of equipment, like in a factory, doing preventative maintenance, doing all those things well, you know, isolating problems and solving them right away, and plant safety of workplace injury type stuff. If you're doing some unusual repair or it's more difficult troubleshooting, or you have intermittent failure, stuff like that, and they allowed to run longer, the opportunities for injuries go up. And so it made me think, though, is in the product design part, if we make a product more robust, use HALT to its full potential, right? Mm-hmm. Take your design to
fundamental innovative technology.
Yeah. That you got to change that name. I can't remember it. And then, but if we take the design to the fundamental limits of technology, and it's a good first choice on what technology we're using,
right?
Does that imply that we're making it safer? Or is that related?
Well, yes. There's many things.
Well, that's a short podcast. Thanks for listening.
No, many times it does. Let's put it that way. Okay. That anything, of course, your priorities in reliability when you're designing a product is anything that causes a safety issue or a possible damage to material, equipment, or and the worst, of course, human injury, such as on a ride in an amusement park or something like that. If you know, if somebody's seatbelt or lockdown bar, it's a safety issue and somebody might fall out, and that is like, you know, the top priority of any reliability program. Must first identify anything that would be a safety related. In mechanics or in a plant, you know, a rotating motor could, if it's not maintained or has a part on it or starts to become worn out, or the lubrication is evaporates and it starts to become overheated, and you know, possibly you could start a fire. Don't know.
Well,
there's a lot of things could happen.
Was that airplane that it was out of Denver, I think, where the engine,
the cowling fell off?
Yeah. It kind of looked bad. I have no idea if that was maintenance or not.
Yeah, that was not something Boeing would ever want to see.
It's somebody else's engine. But
somebody else's engine, right. It might have been a Rolls Royce or whoever makes engine, Pratt & Whitney. But yeah, whether it was maintenance, and this was not a new plane, I mean, it wasn't an initial failure, but you know, some way somebody didn't fasten something or some crack, and yeah, that became a safety issue, not only to the people on the plane, but
I saw the people picture. On the ground. Yeah, I saw a picture of a big chunk of metal in some guy's front door. You know,
it landed in Broomfield.
I get the basic concept, though. If I make something more robust, and I often think of that as part of it is the use conditions and set of stresses that the product will see is generally fuzzy for most of us during the design phase, and our customers will use the product how they see fit, which may expand what we intended it to be used for. So making it more robust makes it more resilient to all kinds of stresses and a range of different failure mechanisms. And it just makes it more, I think, resilient or robust that kind of stuff. And so it takes longer to fail or doesn't initiate some failure mechanism, does all kinds of cool things. And so part of it is just I always look at HALT is first, what's going to fail? So we have something to work on. Two is as we go through that process and improve the design and improve the material sets and improve the concept of it, it's more resilient to a wider set of stresses, which makes it more reliable.
Right. Now, and it is also more reliable or is more tolerant of many times the variation in manufacturing. If you have a part that's over designed or stronger than it needs to be, if one manufacturer, one supplier, vendor makes it a little less so or puts a
or has some contamination in it
or something like that. And it's got enough margin on it that that's not necessarily going to affect its end use and life. Right. Fatigue life. So you're right. I mean, building it up to kind of as strong as it can be with standard materials or processes is the goal. And in spec, I guess, don't they have safety factors for many of the critical items? I mean, many things that
The wing attach has got
a 3x time of, you know, it's got to withstand
expected stresses or stuff. There's okay, and different, like there's not much of a safety factor for the drop down tray behind the seat. You know, it is not designed to withstand somebody dropping their 30-pound suitcase on it from the overhead bin or standing on it. It's just not meant to do that.
No,
I haven't tried it. I've seen people try that. They can't get up in the upper loft and they want to drop the tray. Right. Now the armchairs work great, but then they figured out that they had all these buttons in there, you know, in some of the armchairs and then said, well, that's a bad place for buttons. So they moved them out of there.
Right. But
the idea is that you can, I think part of it is you have to have a reasonable understanding of how people are going to use your product and where it's going to be used and what kind of energies and forces are built within it and all those other aspects of it. It's like a battery system, right?
Right.
It's got to be like if you puncture that lithium ion battery in your electric bike, that's a bad thing, right?
Yeah.
So they don't put it on the outside front edge of this thing, right? They don't put it underneath the center bar, or maybe they do, without shielding of some solid.
Right.
It's not just a, you know, thin film plastic holding your battery on.
It's actually under the seat on the main seat post under between your pedals. And so that it can't hit anything really. You're kind of protected from anything directly striking it.
Right.
Even if the bike falls over, the pedals keep it off the ground. You've got, you know, it's
about the safest place for it to be.
Right, you can put it right.
Right.
I don't know what the housing is built around it.
Yeah, but the idea is that, I mean, part of it is the safety part. Is, well, what's the feature? What are we protecting from? So what kind of stresses, like thermal cycling or puncture or whatever? And then we could do HALT to see what kind of margin we have.
Right.
And so there's, or stress testing to find out the margins. And that, but it starts with you understanding what your risks are for safety. Now, HALT has, and I ran into this one scenario I did, where we're in the chamber and this product's running. And we didn't. It was a wireless device, so we could monitor it outside the chamber. We had enough of a signal to see if it was still alive or not, and then it went dead.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, went dead, right? Opened the chamber, and we could smell something burning. And it was
bad sign.
It was two AA batteries.
So it's
not going to explode or anything. We didn't need a, you know, explosion-proof chamber or anything like that. It was two little AA batteries, but it melted a bunch of plastic and you could smell it and you could see the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was that a safety issue or not? It wasn't a good thing. If in the right conditions, it probably could catch something on fire or be very unpleasant. So HALT can find failure mechanisms that lead to really bad consequences. So I think that's the direct connection to safety. But I don't think it's enough. Where I'm heading with this is if I do HALT and I design a really cool product using the HALT, you know, build, test, fix kind of methodology, it's not the same as saying it's a safe product.
No. It's this may be a subcomponent or subsystem of something that's, you know, put into a bigger system And many times, and you just kind of mentioned it earlier, the actually use of some parts or some subsystems depends. They might be very locked into the design and integrity and only used one way, such as a generator in an airliner or something like mm-hmm. that, you know, specifically, or it might be a more like a consumer product or like my opto switches, or we talked about earlier, an interrupt switch, something like that, that if it's used in a safety application or in an application that in the end, if it fails to sense something, there could be a bad result, a fire or a explosion from overpressurization. Or
like if a valve's open or closed or a door is open or closed or something like that.
Right. It could present itself as a safety issue, whereas the manufacturer of the component or subsystem did not necessarily intend for it to be in such a critical use environment.
It's
and
just sometimes a switch, right? It's just a switch, right.
So they sometimes make, ruggedized switches or ruggedized things and charge a little more for the part.
sometimes a lot more.
sometimes a lot more without much difference in the part itself. I mean, it's been tested. So for those things, it's got to be critical. And in fact, it's really the responsibility of the OEM integrator, the guy who's putting together the larger system, to ensure there's some safety interlocks or interlocks that those don't fail too. Although every time you put in an interlock, you have another element into the system. So you really try to avoid a bunch of trying to protect.
Well, then you end up with all these false failures where your interlocks don't engage or they fail themselves and your system won't start. Yeah, I've run into that a couple of times. But the idea is that there's inherent processes for designing safety into it, and it overlaps a lot with creating a reliable product. But there's the subset where if a product fails, if some element of your product fails, some, like you said, the opto switch that's sensing a critical function of your system that now is spewing gasoline all over the place. Well, if it fails, then that's probably a bad thing, you know? And so part of it is just what you described is being aware of the consequences for the components or subsystems. Even if it's built really rugged, it's still a single point failure, and that may not be acceptable for your thing. So I think HALT can make an already safe design safer. I think that's safe to say. But it in and of itself, it can't take any design and make it safe, because safety includes how it's used, where it's used, what's used as a part of another system. It includes how well
it's assembled, how well it's manufactured. Any of those can be change the strength or susceptibility to failure.
Right.
So those are all critical. I think, one thing I just came to mind is like the gasoline pump handle. Mm-hmm. That would be a real safety issue if it didn't click off every time the tank got filled.
Well, they didn't always do that. I remember driving, and gasoline was 25 cents a gallon when I was growing up, and it didn't click off at the top. The attendant had to either be there or you had to have your hand on it, and you could hear it coming up the throat and you'd turn it off. Otherwise, you'd get splashed with gas.
I know I'm older than you, Fred, and I don't remember that. But
this was in the woods in Wisconsin. Come on, give me a break.
But yeah, I do remember the time that you never filled the tank yourself. You always had the intent to walk up and clean your windows. And
no, they didn't clean the windows. They checked the oil and then used that rag to smear your windows. I remember those guys.
But now we have millions of those pumps all over the United States, and any one of those causing, if somebody, and like now, I think most people, especially on a cold day, might walk back to their car and get inside.
And completely ignore it. Yeah.
And completely ignore it, or walk into the store, the convenience store that's next to.
And go play some pinball. That's what you'd be doing. Six cars all behind you honking. And
gasoline just pumping out of your tank, onto the ground.
Free arcade. Just leave the pump on.
Yes. So that would be, but just think how reliable those have to be. And I don't know if they, used HALT on them. I did one time visit the LPW OPW is the one that make the majority of them, I think.
Okay.
And I did visit their plant. Actually, it was about when I was selling helium mass spectrometers for leak detection. Mm-hmm. And they want to know about leakage and some other testing and right. that. But not the mechanical mechanism, which I don't even know what it is. I think it's a back pressure in the gas tank that clicks that off. Causes that.
Yeah, I have no idea. But it works, and I don't think the nozzles. It's not electronic. It's mechanical. Yeah, whatever it is, it works.
Extremely reliable.
And people get too used to it, as they just let it run until it clicks off, and then you pull it out or touch it again, and yeah, it really did click. And
well, it kind of goes with our expectations of reliability. We've done it 100,000 times, in our life, filling tanks now yeah. for those.
That you do that.
Yeah, that we do that. Nobody ever comes and fills our tanks anymore. So we have to be responsible for that. And I think I've seen maybe one video or something of somebody having that overflow, but rarely have I ever heard of that being, because that would be a severe safety issue with gasoline coming out the tank and onto the ground.
Well, just think of the birds, the Alfred Hitchcock movie.
Yeah, a classic scene.
But it was at a gas station, and
yeah, right. And it fell and blown. That yep. was a big explosion. So those kinds of things. But that's a very specific application. So that switch is made. That mechanical assembly is, I'm sure, tested regularly.
But there's also other features there. So if you drive away, there's disconnects that seal the line. So if you drive away, they don't pull it out of your tank and they drive off. There's a couple of features on the hose and the nozzles that will disconnect with enough force. They'll disconnect and close the line on both sides, so there's no leakage.
Have you tried that?
No, I've seen it. She's driving. She got all the way to the street before somebody ran her down. She's got this 5-foot pole, hose behind her hanging off the side of her car.
Right.
Completely oblivious to it.
Right. So they've anticipated situations with the pump and the failure of something that is absolutely not a standard usage.
Well, it happens. It
happens, right. Yeah. It's known to happen, and they protected themselves against what would be liability for that. I imagine someday.
Well, it'd be bad for the station owner too if you drive away and it takes the whole apparatus with you.
Besides
puts you out
flooding,
of business. Besides flooding the neighborhood with
gas or starting a big fire explosion or something.
That would be
like
bad.
That.
Yeah, always that look overhead for birds.
So for reliability, and safety. Okay. There are, yes, if you make it reliable, you're probably going to make it more safe. And it just depends on the application of the subsystem you're talking about and how much, I don't know how they judge with reliability on critical electronic components. Usually there's redundancy, which is good and bad in a way.
Well,
it adds cost.
One system I worked on years and years ago, they worked as they provided a service to, say, like a chemical plant.
Right.
And you talked about if this valve is left open, then this pressure vessel will, get the wrong mixture and it'll explode. Mm-hmm. Really bad consequence. And it can happen really fast. And so these guys would go in and they would put three different technology type sensing systems, say, on that part of this plant. And then they would have three different lines going back to their system, three different input output boards, three different CPUs, and they would each be programmed to say, well, if that happens, we got to shut it down. And they didn't want to get it wrong and shut a plant down inadvertently, because in a lot of chemical plants, that's very expensive to do. But they also didn't want to miss it. And sometimes they had, less than a second to make a decision and take action. And so they use triple redundancy in a voting system. So if two of them said shut it down, they'd shut down. But most of the time the system was set up so that all three would agree, it'd be immediate. But if two said yes, they wouldn't think about it. They'd say, shut it down. And they would then flag the third part of that system for troubleshooting. Something was not right with that system. And because they didn't have the same sensor input or it didn't interpret it correctly or the software was wrong or CPU board was wrong. And so their system spent 98% of its CPU time doing self-diagnostics. And then anytime the voting disagreed, it kicked off a failure analysis process for it. And but they basically sold it as a service and then included full-time 24-hour support with technicians on site. I mean, this was not a cheap system. But
no.
But talk about not trusting your electronics. And rightfully so, because making an error of a false failure, you know, and shut it down when you shouldn't have would cost tens of millions of dollars, and not shutting it off could be hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, avoiding an explosion.
Right. So it's a avoidance of cost. Of,
But it was
failure that cost would be tremendous.
But
So they were talking about they could justify the cost of the system.
Because of their application.
But the consequences of failure.
But most of us don't. Right? My TV remote does not triple redundant. Sometimes I have to push the button three times for it to do anything. But you know, that's not the same.
Yeah. No. It's right. That's not a critical application. And you know, pinball machines aren't triple redundant either because it's already too expensive a machine. And, you know, everybody's expecting, and it comes with the territory. You know, when you buy a pinball machine, you are going to require maintenance within a year.
So, or even less. So take a look at our last episode 709, where Kirk actually had a good story to tell about it.
There are safety issues with it. I mean, if a pinball machine, I mean, it has interlocks for the high voltage coils and things that could hurt you, but that's important. But there's really other than, you know, something short and cause a fire because they are made out of wood. Yeah. that would be a safety issue.
But they don't put a halogen. Or is it halogen? There's a certain kind of gas.
A fire suppression system in there.
Yeah. No, they don't do that. Do that.
I know. Yeah. Anyway, normally the fuse would blow. You know, that's what you kind of expect is for any electronics that it has enough current or power to cause a failure. Then
we use a fusing system,
right? Usually, our circuit breaker type systems.
Yeah. No. So it's a dangerous world out there, and we keep creating new and dangerous products and systems, and then we start counting on them more. I know your wife works in a hospital, and so think of all the electronics that are in life support and the ICU systems and, you know, all those kinds of things we get involved with one kind or
another. And actually she told me about artificial intelligence now playing a role in reading the fetal monitoring, heartbeat monitoring, and fetal strips, and, you know, using patterns and artificial intelligence is aiding us in reliability in the fact that it may see signal differences
because it's looking constantly.
It has a better resolution than the eyes. Like, you know, they found that AI can find tumor sites or possible cancerous growths in mammograms better than a highly trained
physician.
Yes, because the degree of contrast that a computer can see is much more than the human eye can differentiate. And so, you know, we're relying on that as our safety. Now, we do have to worry about the failure of the AI system.
That's right. And they take over and start, you know, buying up Skynet or whatever it is, whatever company we call it, Google. Yeah,
right.
but we digress. So the basic idea here is that I think we started with this premise is that if you make a robust, reliable product, and the HALT methodology is a really solid way to go about doing it, it makes an existing product safer because it just doesn't fail as readily. But even a reliable product can be dangerous. And if a failure of the design, of the failure of its application, a failure of its interaction with other systems, if that element fails, or lots of other ones, then it's not safe. And so they overlap, they support each other, but they're not the same thing. And so it's something to be cautious about. And so I ran into that in the in the plant maintenance world, that there's a relationship that if you have good running equipment, you reduce the opportunities for injuries, for, you know, doing things you didn't normally do. And that makes sense. Making a product more reliable does make it more safe, but it doesn't make it, air quotes here, safe. There's more inherent parts of the design and its application that apply. So
the application is critical.
Exactly.
And certainly, you know, when you're talking about industrial plants and things like that, you generally have larger equipment, stamping machines, things like that, that are very potentially dangerous if they're not, you know, the sensor for keeping your hands out or whatever. You know, if that were to fail, you know, the robot could swing around and hit you and kill you.
Yep.
So those kind of things, yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, reliability and safety are incredibly tied together. So,
So if you're, you know, thinking about this and dealing with safety issues and overlapping with that, is because it's a natural part of what we do in the reliability world or in maintenance world. They are related. And so what's your story? Join the conversation. Let us know what your experience has been and what you see as the overlap, or did we describe it well? Either way, let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there you'll find a widget to record a voice message to us, or you could leave us a written message. You could find Kirk and I and the other hosts up on LinkedIn or on our About pages. Lots of ways for you to join the conversation. And we'd love to hear from you.
Yes, we love questions.
Yep. Or praise, send money, you know, all that works. All right, Kirk, we'll talk to you later.
All right, Fred, thanks again.
All right, cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.